good to be back with you. We've got a lot of ground to cover. We've got our guest, who I've been talking about for 2 weeks, finally is with us. And so we look forward to that. But first, as I like to do, I would like to discuss a little bit from the Babylon Bee. Did you know that they just recently discovered Hitler's diary? And it reveals that he was just following his heart. In Berchtesgaden, Germany, researchers working at Hitler's eagle's nest in Bavaria have discovered a new diary from the brutal fascist dictator, revealing that the leader of Germany's 1930 and 40 Nazi party was just following his heart and believing in himself. It goes as this: "Dear diary," Hitler reportedly wrote in the journal, which was decorated with unicorns, rainbows, and swastikas, "everyone says I'm crazy, and honestly, that really hurts. But I won't let it get to me. Ultimately, I need to follow my heart and live my own truth, even if that means murdering 15 million people. I'm perfect just the way I am, and for all the haters who try to tell me that my actions make me a horrible monster, well, it's time to let it go. I'm tired of hiding from the world. It's time to embrace who I am. My uniqueness is a strength. So I'm never going to give up, no matter what. Eradication of Germany's undesirables and world domination, it calls me." Other entries include what seemed like Hitler's motivational pep talks to himself, such as, "keep growing, keep fighting, keep doing, and always keep invading. And if you lose a..." I'm sorry, I lost it. "And if you lose a world war, get back up and start another one. Believe in yourself, and there will come a day when others will have no choice but to believe with you, or else they'll be shot, killed, or imprisoned." Researchers have warned that as long as these ideas from Hitler's journal of always following your heart don't take root in popular culture and children's entertainment, then there's nothing to worry about. These guys, every now and then they really hit one. I don't know if all of you caught that, if you really know what he's getting at. There's a modern thought out there that you just have to do you and follow your heart and do the things that you feel are right within your own heart. And as long as you do that, you're okay. But that's, if Hitler had followed that, or if we accepted that with him, or Stalin, or any Pol Pot, any of these people, Attila the Hun, there probably would be no world left today. So without further ado, I'm going to introduce our special guest, David von Riesingham. Yeah. Guten Tag, mein Herr. It's a fitting name after reading about Hitler. Although, see, the V-A-N makes it Dutch.
Yeah, and not Flemish, German. Belgian.
Yeah, Flemish. Yeah, see, Flem, yeah. And see, I know that. See, a lot of people don't know that.
That's right.
The German is von, V-O-N.
Yes.
Dutch is von. It means the same thing, from.
Yes.
And in Germany, it would probably be Riesigheim instead of Riesigheim.
Yeah.
And Riesigheim means a giant home. Yeah. That's what Riesig is, giant, and Heim is home. So you're David from a giant home. Do you have a big house down south of 101st in the Jenks or Bixby School District?
Yeah, there's actually a Baron Riesigheim who we've researched it back to 1043 AD, and that was the last name. And so we're from that lineage.
I see.
Yeah.
The Baron.
Someday I'll have to tell you, my family was actually researched about 5 years ago by the United Nations because they're looking for an assassin by the name of Von Riesigheim. Fortunately.
And they think you're him?
Well, they were researching us. a fella, he didn't tell me who he was, and boy, we're getting off in the. I had to.
No,
call
this him. Is good. I mean, let's say this is the stuff that people listen to.
Fact is, when I figured out what was going on, and I researched this guy and found out he was a genealogist out of the Rome office of the United Nations. Like, okay, he just lied to me, and I right away called Congressman Bridenstine. And I said, the UN is trying to implicate the United States for the assassination of the second Secretary General of the United Nations. He was killed in the Belgian Congo. His plane was shot down, and Obama had turned over some top secret information our CIA had, including the recordings of the fighter pilot by the name of John Van Rissekim. And but then they told me, said he actually came from a family that moved to Germany and then come back, and we can't figure out. I mean, they finally spilled the beans to me what they were after. So I'm not that Van Rissekim, but there are more Van Rissekims in the United States now than there are in Europe. So
at least wink, wink.
Yeah.
You're not that.
Right.
Rissekim. Yeah. Rissekim. And yeah, well, that's good. That's a little extra tidbit there that we didn't even count on. But thanks.
Yeah.
Hope you don't charge us for that.
Yeah.
But anyway, David, no, welcome. Seriously, what I've asked David to do is deal with more local or state politics in the state of Oklahoma. So let me deal with one thing before we get to that, because it'll be a good, you know, interlude there. So I'll start with one of mine, and then you can begin with one of yours.
Yeah, and Eddie, I need to apologize. I'm the one who got you cracking up over there, because I totally lost it on your Babylon Bee story.
Well, that's... I think I would have lost it on that one anyway, because that one was really...
That's awesome.
That was a good one. That's, I just have to do me, you know? That, I have to do me killing 15 people. I just have to do me. Like, I'm sorry. Change me. Don't hate. Don't hate.
Right.
Participate.
He's not a mass murderer. He's a self-identified eugenicist.
Oh,
yes.
There you go.
Yes, there you go. That's my take on it.
That's very good. I'm going to have to remember that one. A self-identified eugenicist.
Yes.
You're just culling the population,
right?
For the fittest and the strongest and the best.
Good. There you go.
That's it. Man, we could go. We could quit. We'll stop right there, right? Or we'll have another whole show. We'll have to dedicate a show to that. But anyway, Democrats, David, have been obsessed with the guns. I mean, it's like... Everything's guns. And there's a huge spike in crime, huge spike. And in your major cities, L.A., Chicago, Philadelphia, New York City, have all seen these major spikes in crime.
Yeah.
Now, of course, the Democrats are going to immediately turn it into a gun thing.
Oh, yeah. The guns get it.
And you've got Joe Biden this week going off on, you know, why we need to ban guns. He never addressed the crime situation. I'm going to use Chicago for an example, because I keep hearing this. You know, we know Chicago has this huge number of people being shot, huge number of people being killed weekly in Chicago. And as bad as it was, it's worse this year than it has been in the past. A lot of people don't know, maybe a lot do know by now. If you don't, Chicago has some of the most restrictive gun laws in the nation. Chicago, Washington, D.C. have the most restrictive gun laws. Yet, gun crime in those cities is off the charts. They also have two of the worst ghettos in the country, black ghettos. But it's just this thing of guns. They don't mention that rapes are up over 100%. 100% rise in rapes, assaults, robberies, theft, you name assault, beating people. They don't mention that, but it's guns.
Yes.
You know, who cares that they're being stabbed, beaten, kicked, bitten, probably spit upon. Everything else is hammers, lawn tools, whatever people are being killed with and assaulted with. Yet, we've got to do something about those high-capacity magazines, which... You know, it's really kind of a shame, because they're missing the whole point. And why is it that the highest crime is in those particularly large cities? For example, Chicago. Yeah. People keep trying to blame Indiana and Indiana's lax gun laws. But I ask, well, wait a minute. Something doesn't make sense here. And this is what gets me too, David. Mm-hmm. Why is it news people, the media, when they're listening to the mayor of Chicago, Joe Biden, whoever, talk about these gun crimes and things, and they mention that Indiana or some states with the gun laws, the people in Chicago are buying their guns across state lines and bringing them back. Why is it then that Indiana is not gun riddled and murder and shootings riddled. You know what I'm saying?
Don't distract us from our narrative.
Now. Yeah, but, well, that's it. You know, it's you've got to look at the. I mean, it's just so simple. As you know, if Biden or one of these people were giving their interview and they make a statement like, or Lori Lightfoot, mm-hmm. there, the mayor of Chicago, and says, "Well, it's the guns they're buying in Indiana." Excuse me, Madam Mayor. Then why does Indiana not have the problems we have if they have no or very lax gun control laws?
Yeah.
Why is crime over there not? Why is it all here? Is it mm-hmm. because the people here, they know the people here can't defend themselves?
Yeah.
You try that in Indiana, you might get shot.
Mm-hmm.
Oklahoma, the shootings are way down in the areas where people have guns, the most people.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of your black communities and poor communities where for whatever reason, maybe they can't afford it or they're still thinking, well, I'm going to follow the Democrat line and not buy guns. I'm going to protest guns, so I just won't have one. And you end up making yourself a target versus anything else.
Yep.
So that's, you know, one of those deals where just common sense would tell you if the top, say, 25, 30 states that have high numbers of shootings and gun crime
mm-hmm.
are those that have very tight gun laws, and the lowest ones on that scale have loose gun laws, where is the problem?
Yep.
The problem is the people don't have guns. It gets back to the whole thing of deterrent.
Yes.
Nobody's going to break into my house until, you know, unless they face a few guns.
Right.
And so forth. So that's just something that we need to deal with.
Can I say something on that?
Yeah, go ahead.
Another good example. I was talking to my grandfather. He was showing me his new RV, and he is really proud of it. And he said, you know, I was down there at the dealer, and the first thing that we were going through, and the dealer said, oh, by the way, this is a good place to store a shotgun, but a handgun can fit over in there. And he looked at it, and he said, oh, really? He said, I thought I was the only one. The snowbirds from Minnesota going down to Florida, you know, and the dealer says, you ever notice why you don't see more armed robberies of snowbirds, the RVers?
I didn't think of that.
Right. And he said, no, he said, because they all pack heat.
Wow.
And because a lot of those folks, you know, old school, they bring cash on the road with them.
Yeah.
And they are a rich target, except they pack heat.
Yeah.
People leave them alone.
Yeah.
Well, in the same thing, the rental car business in Florida, they had to change their license plate so it didn't identify that was a rental car, because that told them it was somebody who flew in, doesn't have a gun, uh-huh. and is carrying cash and will probably not come back for the trial to be a witness against you. So there's all these things. Another rabbit trail. Go ahead, Eddie.
No, it's all right. You know, that brings me to something too about Oklahoma. I have to tell you this. I have spoken before about my wife thinking that I have black privilege.
Mm.
Yeah, you know, you hear about white privilege. Yeah. You know, I have black privilege, apparently.
Yeah.
An example. Yeah. Last night, I decided to go up to Owosso. And I decided to, you know, have a snack and a drink at this restaurant. I'm coming. I don't know what the speed limit in Owosso is. Mm-hmm. I thought it was like Tulsa. It's usually 40 miles, you know, on your main streets, roads. Mm-hmm. Well, apparently I learned it's 35
mm-hmm.
because I made a turn to get back on the freeway and whoop, those lights, and they got me. You know, and I'm saying, oh, my goodness. Okay. So the guy comes up. Good evening, sir. Do you know what the speed limit is here? I wanted to say, apparently not. But I said, I said, no, sir, I don't. I said, 45?
Mm-hmm.
He said, no, it's 35. Oh, well, I'm sorry. In Tulsa, it's 40, 45. So I didn't realize it was different here. And I said, okay, where have you been? Do you have anything to drink tonight? I said, yeah, I had a beer.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, how big was the beer? Well, it was about this big,
yeah.
You know, it wasn't a tall one. It was one of those big extra double. It was just a regular beer.
Yeah.
And, okay, may I see your driver's license and da-da. And so all of a sudden, then he, you know, he said, okay. And he asked me a few questions. What would you step out of the car?
Yeah.
So I'm sure, you know, I get out of the car, step to the front of the car and had me in the lights and everything. He's patting me down. Well, what happened? I got out. He noticed I have a gun in my car.
Oh, yeah. Yeah,
and I didn't give him my concealed carry card, which you don't need in Oklahoma
That's
anymore.
That's true.
But he said, oh, I'm going to get this. I said, oh, yeah, He put it in his car.
Yeah.
And so then he starts patting me down. He gets done. And then I said, by the way, I have a concealed carry license for that. Oh. Yes, sir. In that short term, he said, "Now you know you're supposed to show me this
first thing."
I said, "Yeah, I always forget. In fact, I'll be honest, I forgot the gun was there in that my like you talk about compartment. I've got a place that it's real easy to get to." Mm-hmm. He said, "Yeah, it's fine." And then he had me do this little, walk.
Oh yeah, field sobriety test.
Field sobriety test. You know, and I was scared because my knee's been bugging me, and I'm nervous as I'll get out. And, my mother's at home, a bunch of stuff that I was trying to say, oh man, this is not good. I left my phone at home. I didn't have a phone on me. I'd have been just in, lost, I'd have been somewhere lost in Owasso. Mm-hmm. But anyway, I do my little foot test. And I tell you, there were two things going off in my brain at the same time. Oh man, this is not good. This is not good. What if I flunk this thing? What if they take me to jail? And the other side, it was, this is kind of cool. I've never done this before.
Yeah.
Sure. Because you've seen it on television. Ooh. And I hope I pass. Let me give it my best shot. Mm-hmm. And so I'm doing this little walk, one foot in front of the other and then turn around. And I just knew my first step, I start like, oh no, I'm going to fall over. I'm in trouble. But no. And each step I figured it out. I'm not, it's funny. Right now, you could ask me to do that. I probably wouldn't do it any better than I did it. I mean, I wasn't high. I wasn't drunk,
Yeah.
But he had me do this. So anyway, after we got done, he said, well, thank you, sir. Have a good night and let me go. No ticket, no nothing. No, it's my black privilege again, So that's what my wife would say. But what I'm really getting at is hats off to the Owasso Police Department. The guy was very respectful, courteous. He did his job. I want to say, I should have said, oh, thanks for doing your job, officer, because, had I been, inebriated or something, I could have been in danger on the road or whatever. Mm-hmm. But no, he was very professional. He wasn't acting overly afraid. He wasn't, and then he said, boy, you're lucky I didn't pull my gun out. I said, well, thank you so much for not pulling it. After he saw my gun, it could easily have turned ugly real fast. I could have been another one of those black lives that don't matter. but it just shows, again, I mean, numerous times I've been stopped by law enforcement in Owasso, Tulsa, and other areas, and the police have always been really respectful. I think the reason is because I respect them.
Oh, yeah.
I would say, yes, sir. Hi, officer. How are you? Sure. Here's my insurance. Here's my registration. Here's my license. Here's this. Here's this. And I will be honest with you, though. I do believe having a concealed carry license does help.
Good.
Because I think they like that because they know you're a responsible gun owner. You've gone that extra step to try to go.
Yeah.
Which is also a subject for another discussion on the
registration. It is, but that's a valid point. Yeah.
Yeah, on getting the license or not. But anyway, I just wanted to take some time here today to just give some, real appreciation to the Owasso Police Department for the way they train their officers. In fact, let me throw this one thing in. I noticed this before. You remember when Mr. Crutcher was shot up there in North Tulsa?
Yeah.
Who never should have been shot.
Absolutely.
To me, that was a travesty what they did and the way that they over-prosecuted. I mean, overcharged, under-prosecuted in the whole deal.
Yes.
But because, and this is something that bugs me about conservatives. I'm going to throw this out there real quick. That anytime a person gets shot by the police, the first, particularly a black person, within 5 minutes, you can go online and find their criminal record for the last 4 years.
Yeah.
Nobody ever bothers to check the record of the police officer. If we did that to find out, has he had complaints? Are they known to be overreactive and so forth? But anyway, the difference in Crutcher being shot, then there was a case just a couple of weeks or a month later in Owasso again, where a lady rammed her car and pinned an officer to the wall.
Wow.
You don't remember that?
I do.
Yeah. She pinned the guy to the wall. There were two out. And the guy is there being crushed by the car, and they didn't shoot her. Now, that would have been a justified shoot.
Yes.
I mean, if it had been me, she might have had one in the head.
Yes.
You know, I mean, seriously, but to exercise that much restraint to not shoot when this lady is obviously trying to kill you, running her car into you and got you pinned against the wall. The other, there was another officer, I guess, that finally pulled her out of there and they got the guy out. But yeah, Joe, it just shows the difference that officers can show restraint.
They can.
And sometimes they do. And often it is right now, not saying that there's not a time to use lethal force. There are definitely cases, but I'm just saying for them, those are heroes.
Yeah.
You know, we like to say, well, police are just like everybody else. What would you do? You would have shot this person or you did that. But I'm not a hero.
Yeah.
A hero goes beyond. They put their life in danger to not take a life.
Yes.
So either they're not heroes and they're just like everybody else, scared and shooting, like, you know, at the first instance of trouble, or they're heroes and they are ready to risk death. Yeah. I don't want any officers to die or get killed.
That's right.
But I'm just saying, and again, it's interesting that it was Owosso that those police officers were Owosso police. So
yes.
Anyway.
Well, I wanted to respond to a couple of things there. First of all, I do some training of law enforcement on mental health. It's called crisis intervention training because I do help families. I've been trained in this. And something I've learned from these officers, first of all, they will have their public position on things like the Crutcher death. But I want you to know, back at what you call the precinct house, they are very hard on themselves and hold each other accountable. So you get their public persona, and then you get, I mean, they agonize over it. So so that's one thing. Another thing, I find myself in the crisis intervention training actually bringing balance to their other training. Because one of the things that law enforcement trainers will say is an officer will always default back to their training. That's why there's that repetitiveness. They want it to be instinctive, like the military is that way. And so, like, I remember you talking about a terrible Muskogee shooting. A police officer killed a guy at a wedding. And you got that right. He did have a gun, but it was tucked in his waistband. They shot him for picking up his phone. And they shot him 5 times in the back. You know, and I appreciated your honesty on that.
I appreciate you. You're one of the few people that has remembered mentioned that I was right.
Yes.
At least in my mind.
Absolutely. But what a law enforcement officer is trained primarily in is how to deal with bad dudes, bad attitudes and stuff. And I come in and try to give them additional training on how to understand a confused person in psychotic crisis and learn to determine the difference between the two, because the way you react is completely opposite in many ways, unless, of course, your life as an officer is in danger. You always have the right to take prudent measures to protect your own life. So hats off to the officers, but I think it's not that we need more training. We need balanced training.
No, I agree totally. And policemen are generally in the right, but we have to be willing to allow them to sometimes not be right.
Yeah.
And sometimes they slip through, you get a bad one. I have stories, personally, not my experience, but things with my son and other people I've seen where police officers have abused their authority or are just nutcases in a uniform.
Yeah.
But that is the total odd out person, right? That's not your average person. So
By the way, to racial privilege, it's another thing. You once said on the radio one morning, if you're rich, you ain't black. You want to explain that?
There was a Larry Holmes, heavyweight champion, many years ago, back during apartheid. And South Africa used to have these fights at Sun City. It was a real famous big gambling resort with a rich and famous. And at Sun City, it was integrated. Even though South Africa was segregated and had apartheid, Sun City was a place, every black, white, you name it, Asian, you know, in their sense, white, colored, and black could all mingle together. And so Larry Holmes was going to fight there, and American media, of course, not happy with that, asking, Larry, how can you, as a black man, fight in Sun City in South Africa? He said, because I've learned, if you're black and rich, you ain't black. And so that always stuck with me. And it's true. In fact, in fact, David, I actually went to South Africa in 1984. Apartheid was still going strong.
It was big.
And I, it was funny because I remember one day, I was staying with these friends in Pretoria, the capital. And I was, they were white friends, and I'm staying there. And so I remember I left something in my car. We were going in the house, and I ran back to the car to get my wallet, my bag, something out of the car. And I hear this noise in South African, you know, some South African. This older white gentleman was walking his dog, and he's yelling at me. And so I knew what he was saying, you know, you Kaffir, which is their N-word over there.
Okay.
What are you doing over there? So I ran over, and just as I got to him, I said, what'd you say? And you should, his reaction just totally changed.
Your accent, right, gave you away.
Oh, American. American, are you? Yes, I'm American. And now, what did you want? Oh, nothing. Just have a good day.
Ooh.
Oh, yeah. And it happened a number of times.
Yes.
And another time, these other friends wanted to take me to a movie. We were going to a movie. So I said, well, listen, I don't want any international incident. So I want you to call the movie and find out, is it okay? They call the movie. We've got an American bloke here, and he's worried about an incident because he's black. He's a black fella. He's a black fella. Anyway, and so they called the movie, said, you say he's American? Yeah, nope. Just have him bring his passport.
There you go,
And so when I got there, and I said, the guy taking the tickets, he says, an American, are you? I just love America. I love Michael Jackson. You know, this is a white guy, white ticket taker. And I was just cracking up. But it really did solidify what Larry Holmes had said. And also a couple of other things. My American passport. You talk about white privilege, black privilege, whatever. American privilege. Everywhere I've gone in the world, I've been, you know, East Africa, North Africa, Australia, all over Europe, Eastern Europe, Central Europe, Western Europe. I've been all over Europe. And everywhere I go, when you're American, it has a special meaning, especially black American. They don't realize, we don't realize how privileged we are to be black American. If you go to Africa, black Africans look at black Americans like gods.
Really?
Oh, because they know you guys really have it made over there.
Yeah.
And we're here whining and crying, poor, poor, pitiful us. The white man's holding me down. And we just don't know. When I go over there, honestly, everybody's looking at you. The kids are running after you. It's weird. It's just, it's strange. And yet, black Americans have this poor, poor, pitiful me. And I know what it is. They're just trying, as we used to say, get over. They're just trying to manipulate and use that black thing, pull that black card, if you will. And it's got to stop. It needs to stop.
Can I say, though, it still exists, the racial, you know, prejudices, the stereotypes. My daughter is married to a young black man. I'm proud of this young man. In fact, I showed you a picture one time. You said, oh, he's a nerd.
Yeah, he's not black. He's a nerd.
Yeah. But anyway, in fact, he had a fanny pack strapped around him. That's going to make you a nerd as a young college age guy. But, you know, he was taking my daughter was driving her car, and he was taking her down to Kiefer to show her where he lived during his middle school years. And they missed a turn, and then they were going to do a U-turn on Highway 75. And the cop sees him, and he decides to pull him over. And my daughter's driving. It's her car. He's riding shotgun, right? And he's asking her things and then gets her out of the car, brings another officer, waits for him, and then this other officer's keeping him in the car. And this officer's just like, are you okay? Are you under duress? Is he making you do anything? You know, an attractive young white woman and a black guy, you know, what was their mindset? Immediately go to, you know, is she somehow, you know, sex slave or, you know, human trafficking or some, yeah. You know, and that's the thing. So it's real. And it happens. Oh, and this is Kiefer, Oklahoma.
Exactly. No, I do believe that. Sure. My daughter's had that experience in Tulsa.
Yeah.
In Tulsa. She had that experience with her old boyfriend. I've told people my daughter doesn't look black, mm-hmm. although black people know she's black. It's funny.
Yeah.
How they can tell.
Oh, yeah.
But white people went to the police, were asking her the same thing. Are you okay? And had her boyfriend out. You know, and they're sitting just talking in a parking lot after work. They used to work at the old Tippins together, and they were together and that type of thing. I mean, I'm a pioneer in this stuff in some sense. And yet, nothing compared to what it was 100, 150 Absolutely. To 300 years ago. Nothing compared to that. Yep. But these people that are complaining today, nothing like that at all.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like another world. You don't know how good you have it compared to how I had it growing up. And then I had it good compared to the people that preceded me by 50 and 100 years. It's unbelievable.
Yeah, as Pastor Price, Paula Price says, this ain't that.
Yeah, All right, we're going to take a break here, and then when we get back, we're going to deal with some Oklahoma stuff, and I also want to deal with what happened to stereotyping. So, David, you have some local or state news.
I do. I've got a couple of items here. I want to first talk about we're closing a prison in Oklahoma, and we ought to all be celebrating, you know. Was it?
I think so.
Yep. 5 years ago.
Get the guns out, fire in the air, you know.
You know, 5 years ago, the voters passed two criminal justice reform measures, 780, 781. And, you know, it did a couple of things. One, it turned some, you know, property theft into misdemeanors just because you got to adjust for inflation. You know, a $500 theft of 40 years ago is like $1,000 or more today.
Right, right.
So they adjusted that. And what happens is when you switch it to misdemeanor, by state law, that's capped at no more than 12 months in jail. And we also say that any sentence about 12 months or less is served in the county jail, not in the state prison. So the state only takes responsibility for the long-term incarcerations. And because of this, and also some drug, small amounts, you know, if you're carrying something that a doctor hasn't approved, then...
How about a couple of joints?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Okay.
I'm sorry. I'm bad idiot.
Those are so we're showing our boomer right now. So anyway, so we got this minimum security jail out Woodward County, past the city of Woodward, Fort Supply. And the state prison just said, gosh, this is costing us so much. We don't need it. Our prison population's down. We've already closed some of our corporate, you know, the private prisons, like in Stroud, we close that up and stuff like that. So you would think people would be celebrating, but you turn on commercial media, oh, they're all whining. I mean, it's just terrible. The jobs, we're losing 169 state jobs. It's going to destroy the economy. And all the narrative is that this is bad news. Kind of like whenever the local school district has to, you know, tighten their belt. It's terrible. It's terrible. But where's the narrative for this is good for the taxpayers? This is keeping government.
No, yeah. I agree totally. It almost makes it. Yeah, we've got to let's go just find some more criminals and keep the prison open so we can keep these jobs.
Exactly.
It's putting people's jobs ahead of what's best for the individuals and everyone else.
Right.
Like yeah. I've said, I've often said, and I think we talked about it earlier today, even how some people on the right have gone so far right that they're now left.
Yeah.
You know, they've come all the way around because yeah. they want to adopt the same. Not the same ideology, but the same methods
yeah.
as the left does.
Sure.
And they're offended in the same way and by the same things and so yep. forth. It's funny you mentioned that prison because when I met my wife some 48 years ago, mm-hmm. maybe almost 49. Wow. Mm-hmm. Anyway, I met her the night she came to the Lord. I was a prayer room counselor, and I made a disciple out of her. As I followed the great, I followed the commission to make disciples
of all men.
God blessed
you, didn't he?
Yes, he did. Anyway, so he, but in that time after she came to the Lord, she had a boyfriend,
yeah.
and he was in that prison you're talking
yes.
about. He had gotten arrested for hauling a U-Haul load of marijuana.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I think even today that one would probably
yeah,
put him
would,
in jail.
Huh?
But a U-Haul full, and they put him in there. But he ended up in this good lawyer, and I think it was 400 pounds or something of marijuana. But he ended up in that prison. She was telling me how she visited him, and she couldn't believe how nice the prison was.
Yeah.
You know, she was talking about how wonderful the prison was and so forth. So anyway, that kind of it's interesting you mentioned because I haven't thought of that place in years and years. But no, getting back to your point, though, David, you're right. We have so many things that as conservatives, we don't want to get rid of. And again, I think it gets down to one thing, and that's money. Again, it's
yeah.
the money thing. Money,
mm-hmm.
true, or the love of money, as the scripture
mm-hmm.
actually
there
says.
You go.
The love of money is the root of all evil, and it causes people to not think. A lot of conservatives, I believe, have bought into this. They enjoy getting their stimulus checks.
Yeah.
They enjoy cheap labor to do mm-hmm. your lawns, do this,
yep.
do that. But at the same time, they want to beef about
mm-hmm.
all of the things. Oh, we got all these illegal aliens.
Yeah.
Da, 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 da,
yeah.
Da. But yet at the same time, we don't want to pay the cost mm-hmm. that if we got rid of all of these people,
right.
what it would cost us.
Yeah.
Which I am not for letting illegal aliens in. I'm very right. much, as you, I know,
yeah.
We are very much for immigration policies, strict borders,
sure.
strict immigration policies. You try to pull that stuff. I have friends that flew to Europe
mm-hmm.
to join Youth with a Mission.
Yeah.
And they didn't have $2,000 in their pocket.
Mm-hmm.
They walked them over to the ticket counter. There's an American embassy person there. Mm-hmm. Somehow they have this worked out. They put them on the next plane back home. And they billed them for the flight.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, Europe is tough. There were New Zealanders that were there. And every 3 months, they had to take a train, go across the border to Germany, get it restamped for a new
yeah.
visitor's visa.
Oh, yeah.
But to get an immigration
visa,
it's really tough.
It sure
Again,
is.
Though, it's funny, but Americans seem to not have that problem.
Yeah.
When my wife and I and two children showed up in Holland in 1981 in Amsterdam, never been there, and the guy asked me, how long are you planning to stay? I don't know.
Ooh.
I don't know however long. And you should have seen the guy was just,
ooh,
his look
answer.
Was, oh my goodness. And he goes on stamps my thing. Later I found out he could easily have said, well,
yeah.
you're not getting in here.
That's right.
But it was that hubris, I guess you
yeah.
would call it, of being an American. You know, I was I was the handsome American.
Oh,
American,
yeah. There
but
you go.
No, I was full of myself. And I later I thought some of the things, stupid things I did, that uh-huh. I got away with. But so many other people, I know people personally who don't get away with half or haven't
yeah.
gotten away with half of what I've. And this is, again, this was 1981. I mean,
mm-hmm.
this is, what, 30 years ago?
Oh,
40 years ago. 40, oh, my yeah. goodness. I'm losing the date. Woo. Yeah. And yet, you know, but I have more stories, but we digress again. Well, what else you got? What
well,
else you
I
got?
Just want to say bit, on that. On
the prison thing?
Yeah. We want our cake and eat it too, as the old saying goes. Yes. We've got a lot of people moving out of the East and West Coast and moving to the Heartland now post-COVID. They're sick of California. And our biggest concern is, you know, are they going to turn us liberal? Well, here's the dichotomy.
That is a concern.
Yeah. Here's the dichotomy. These are people that are disenchanted where liberalism took California to, right? So you like to think on a conscious level, they're rejecting that conservatism and they want Midwestern values and government and everything. The problem is they don't always think it through. You know, have you ever at some point, you know, every teenager says, I'm never going to be like my mom and dad, right? And then you have kids, he's like, oh, my God, I'm just like my mom and dad, you know. So we just, you know, habitually take on certain values and we don't readjust our thinking. And that's the part that we should be concerned about is are all these people coming back from the East and West Coast to the Heartland, have they thought through why it is? And have they, you know, really informed their advocacy to follow that?
No, no, they haven't.
Yeah.
That's the sad.
Yeah.
News. Texas, it's happening.
Yeah.
It's already happened in Georgia.
Yeah.
It's Tennessee, Kentucky. We see this purpling of blue states.
Yeah.
And it's a scary thought. It's a scary thing. It would be nice if we could all of a sudden switch and all of us move to California and turn it the other way. But maybe that's what we should do. We should have a second Dust Bowl.
Yeah.
Excuse me. But I doubt that's going to happen. But, yeah, you're right. You're right. You know, I don't think I've thought about a little with regard to these domestic immigrants, mm-hmm. but immigrants from Central Latin America mm-hmm. and Europe and Africa that are coming yeah. through the southern border. Why, if you're living in Guatemala, mm-hmm. Mexico, El Salvador, Nicaragua, mm-hmm. wherever, and you come to America, why would you want to turn it into the country that you had before? And mm-hmm. but it's the same thing because we would mm-hmm. you would think yeah. that they will become Americanized, the old melting pot, mm-hmm. as the Europeans. You remember when Germans, sure. Poles, Italians,
yeah.
you name them, came over through Ellis Island.
Yes.
They assimilated.
Yeah, they did.
In fact, the story after story of the children were not allowed to speak in their native tongue. Mm-hmm. Remember that?
Yeah,
they were not allowed to speak in their native tongue because they wanted them to be American.
Yeah.
Because they knew what they left was not as nice as what they've come to.
Right.
Now, for some reason, plus I think the lure is different. Mm-hmm. The lure now is to free money, free housing, free food, free education, free, like yeah. that commercial, free.
Yeah.
And so that, I think, is different from what it used to be. It used to be come to America, work hard,
yeah.
become rich, become yeah. powerful, become whatever.
Mm-hmm.
That's no longer come to America and live easy.
Yeah.
Live easy. And that's what I think the big difference is.
If I could say something here, and this is going to shock and probably upset some people, I would rather take a Latin American immigrant over a Eastern European or even a Canadian immigrant. I tell you why. I'd rather have a family that's not used to the government providing anything for them, where they say it's the rugged individualism. I go to a place where I have a chance to work hard, keep my nose clean, and get somewhere, instead of someone says, well, the government, you know, needs to put me up in a project like East Germany, you know. So that's my view of it. We need that immigration. We need to be careful that we do it the right way, but we got to do it in an orderly way.
Right, but that's not what's happening. I agree with you. That's what it used to be mm-hmm. for the Latin American or whatever, Hispanic American mm-hmm. or Hispanic immigrant.
Yeah.
That's what it used to be like. Come to mm-hmm. America and work. Oh, for example, I know two clients of mine, insurance mm-hmm. clients, came and worked as dishwashers at Mexicali.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And the one ended up owning, I think, 3 or 4 houses that he eventually rented out, was buying new cars and the whole deal. And as a dishwasher, became kitchen manager, then front-end manager, and worked their way up.
Yeah.
And had the foresight and the acumen to be able to buy homes. He became a real estate, a landowner, if you will. And doing very well, raised the kids, good education, the whole nine yards.
Sure.
And that's what it used to be like. Mm-hmm. Now, this is 30 years ago when this happened with these guys, mm-hmm. within the last 30 years even. Mm-hmm. So it's one of these deals where we have so degraded. And I'm sorry, but I just have to point one finger directly at the Democrat Party,
mm-hmm.
the Democrat Socialists. Mm-hmm. That's exactly what
that's
it is.
That's what they are.
They want to get people addicted to the government cheese.
Oh, yeah.
And then
stimulus check.
Keep them in power, mm-hmm. and they will keep giving you the scraps while they live their own life. Look at communism, right? In the Communist Party, party mm-hmm. members.
Yeah.
People don't realize, they think of communism, socialism as this utopian ideal where mm. everything's equal.
Yeah.
But no, it's not.
Mm.
Because you're either a member of the party or you're not a member of the party. Yeah. If you're a member of the party and within the party, mm. then according to how much butt you kiss,
yeah.
and how many of their orders you follow,
yeah.
and how much wrong you're willing to do, you get promoted.
Yeah.
The Black Sea resorts, mm. where all of the top people went,
sure.
and they had prostitutes on right. these islands. They were doing drinking, partying, everything. It made Epstein look bad.
Yes.
You know, make him look like a saint compared to some of the stuff that the Communist Party the people were doing. Eastern Europe, you had Romania, Albania.
Sure.
All of the former Soviet states.
Yeah.
These leaders were all enriching themselves, kind mm-hmm. of like certain Democrats
yeah.
have enriched themselves. It's funny, Republicans go to Capitol Hill rich,
mm-hmm.
and people complain about how rich. Democrats go poor and become rich,
yep.
and nobody says anything.
Yeah.
Because they're for us. They're for the people. They're for those rich Republicans don't care. Well, how do you think those other guys got rich? Walking yeah. on you. So anyway, that's just one of those deals that it frightens me that people will come to this nation thinking one thing because of what they left.
Mm-hmm.
We reject that. And yet not understand, just like you said with the domestic immigrants, that, it's good in Oklahoma. It's just good there. So we're mm-hmm. going to go and we're going to vote for the same people, the same policy, the same everything.
Yeah.
When we get to Oklahoma, and expect it to remain Oklahoma and not become California
yeah.
or New York City or whatever, right?
Yeah.
And that's just stupidity. It's the old definition of insanity, right?
Yeah.
Doing the same thing over and just expecting a different result. And
it's
not going to happen. So.
You know how Yang, when he was running for president, you know, pushed this guaranteed basic income. Well, I found out we've actually done that before in the United States. It was guaranteed basic income, guaranteed housing, guaranteed health care with maternity benefits, and guaranteed food support. It was called a plantation.
Oh, you had to go there. You had to go there. You racist, you supremacist, you talking about the plantation. Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. Well, I'm trying to keep the white folk off. As C.L. Bryant says, keep the white folk off the plantation.
Yeah,
because the white folk are wanting to go live on the plantation.
Yeah, they are. They are. And that's interesting. That's another whole topic right there, what we're doing. All right. Wow, man. We better move on or we'll be here. No, this is good. Seriously, this is very good. This is exactly what I've been wanting to see happen. I teased this as we were going to break. The question is, what happened to stereotyping? And you mentioned stereotyping earlier. Well, here's the deal. Get this, okay? The entire premise of critical race theory, CRT,
mm-hmm.
is that white people are inherently racist and evil, right? Yeah. I mean, that's what it is. White people have to pay for their institutional, and they can't help it. They're just...
Oh,
they're
bless their hearts. We don't know that.
Yeah, yes. They're just messed up.
Yeah.
And I remember about 70 to 300 years ago that black people are all lazy and criminally inclined, right?
Yeah.
They'll lie to you. They don't want to work unless you use force. They'll steal your stuff. Mm-hmm. They'll rape your women. Mm-hmm. All of these things were the stereotypes about Black people that they were inherently like this. Yeah. Well, finally, we woke up, proved ourselves over the 300 years of that we are much better than that.
But
that was stereotyping, and rightly so. It was condemned, and it was wrong.
Yep.
But now, with the teaching of CRT, white privilege and white guilt, not only is it acceptable, but it's sanctioned, encouraged in the highest places.
Yes. And you'll be graded on it for your report card.
Today, even the hint that crime is more common in predominantly Black areas is seen as near criminal.
Yeah.
Right? You can go to jail. It's a hate crime.
Yeah.
That you know, to stereotype and punish somebody based on that. We've all seen the riots in the last year or in the past five decades. Just let any police chief, politician, or media person say these things are because the Black folks living in these areas are crime prone.
Crime prone.
And prone to rioting and looting, et cetera, right?
Yeah.
Even just hint at it.
Yeah.
They're gone. They're toast. Mm. Oh, you can't say that. That's stereotyping. It's a racist, blah, 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 blah. But just this week, Thoroughly Modern Millie, Thoroughly Modern General Milley.
Oh, yes.
Tried to justify training against CRT in the military, right?
Yeah.
And his belief is there's white rage.
Mm-hmm.
Do you listen to, what's his name? Oh, the guy that took Rush Limbaugh's place here in Tulsa.
Marquet.
Marquet, he did a thing yesterday. I wish I could have gotten the clip. They did a whole.
Yeah.
Oh, did you hear that?
No, I didn't.
They did a little spoof, a little ad on white rage. You know, and anyway, he said it sounded like a heavy metal band coming to a town near you soon. It's white rage, and he got to turn all this music going. Yeah. You know, listen to the greatest hits of white rage and blah blah blah. And it was like the funniest, but the best thing I've heard in a long time. By the way, Marquet's good. I like his show. It's a very entertaining show.
Yep.
They're on our local station here. But, you know, General Milley actually is promoting the thing of white rage.
Oh, yeah.
January 6th was white rage performing at the Capitol. Yeah, it's ridiculous.
Yeah.
And you talk about a buffoon
with
a capital B. This guy is just unbelievable.
Yes.
But anyway, CRT is nothing more than stereotyping.
Sure it is.
Right? Critical race theory. Whites are biologically and psychologically prone to rage over race.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, it's like this thing that they've adopted and began promoting that all of a sudden. In fact, I like to say it this way. You, for example, David, you wake up every morning and even before you get that cup of coffee, you think, how can I screw over some Black person today?
Yeah.
I mean, that's all you think about. And all day long, you look for Black people to mess with.
That's what they say. Well,
can I steal their stuff? Can I subdue them? Can I belittle
them?
Exploit them, right. What can I do today to make the life of a non-white person? You don't have to worry about.
And I don't even know I'm doing it.
Yeah, exactly. That's the worst part because it's pathological.
Yes.
It's so deeply ingrained in you. It's that gene. It's that white rage gene.
Yeah. Yeah. And I have to tell you, the church I've been, you know, going to for a while, she, one of the pastoral leaders, right after the George Floyd death, you know, got on Facebook with a, I'll never know what it's like. And I understand that I don't have, you know, the game. And it was that usual CRT thing. And I just will never know. And I finally had to get on Facebook and give a response and say, no, Christ tells me I must behave in a certain way. And by him telling me it's my duty to treat other people with honor, that means he's empowered me to do his will.
Right.
And to you, for a Christian to say, I'll never know because I'm white, then you're saying Christ is not strong enough, big enough to address your whiteness.
That's the stupidest thing. I know exactly what you're talking about because I see it all the time, too.
Yeah.
I'll tell you where it's also very, very prevalent, and it just makes me want to puke, is a white couple that adopted a mixed race or a black kid, right? Yeah. Oh, my poor black child. I'm going to a poor mixed race child. It's going to blah, blah, blah. God, don't give me that. You don't know. I was born a mixed race child 5 years after the end of World War II in Nazi Germany, an unwed mother. And I have mixed race kids of my own. It never came up.
Yeah.
It never came up. Well, and all of a sudden, you're going to invent all of a sudden that your poor child, when you're living in the suburbs, your kids are going to best schools, your kids are dressed nice, they're eating well, and probably treated special.
Yeah, they're teaching victimhood.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, like, come on, folks. Like, you know, C.L. Bryant said, you know, and you talked with him a couple weeks ago. He says, look, I'm trying to get the white folk off the plantation. It's absolutely right in so many ways.
Yeah. Let's discuss critical theory real quick.
Yeah.
Okay, which is basically what critical race theory came from. They just interjected race into the word, the words instead of CRT. It's, an R into the CT, basically, critical theory. A lot of people put it back to Karl Marx.
Yep.
But it actually, what we know of as critical race theory today is actually from the Frankfurt School.
Okay.
From Frankfurt, Germany.
Germany, sure.
Germany. And it grew up along right next to Nazism.
Sure.
Starting in 1917.
Right.
These people liked Karl Marx's theories, but he didn't go far enough. He didn't do it right.
Yeah, wasn't Marx more dealing with the classes, economic classes, and, you know, denigrating the rich, the bourgeois, I think was the term they like to use, you know, and basically creating this economic hatred between the classes. We're just changing Marx's, you know, economics for race.
Yeah.
That's the way I
see it. Even critical theory post-Marx.
Yeah.
Was not so much dealing with that as it was challenging every institution.
Yeah.
So no matter what it was.
Tear it down. Yeah.
And this, I believe, actually helped lead to Nazism because it was in 1927, between 27 and 33, when Hitler was gaining power and they were able to challenge the establishment, the Kaiser and the German government at that time, tear it down and then rebuild this thing, which we see was like a monster.
But you notice how Hitler responded to that Marxist, breaking us down by economics is he brought in a nationalism, a pride in the German people.
Right.
And that it's interesting to see some of the same things happening here.
Yeah.
And we just got to be careful that we don't repeat that history to either extreme.
Yeah, I don't have a problem with nationalism, believe it or not. I think it is worthy to be. For example, I'll give you a perfect one: Judaism.
Yes.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Jews.
Yes.
That's a nationalism, if you will, to in a sense.
It would.
The pride in your Jewishness.
Sure.
As opposed to everything else.
Sure.
I don't hear anybody crying about black nationalists.
Right. Yes.
In fact, are you familiar with the black nationalist flag, the red, black, and green? Have you ever seen this red, black, and green?
Yes.
That's called the black nationalist flag. Sure. People they want to wipe out the Confederate flag. Those same people are already waving the red, black, and green flag, which is the black nationalist flag. So, again, I'm not opposed to building or being proud of your nation, which we see every 4 years in the Olympics. We see it at the World Cup. I mean, people are proud of their land, their nation. We compete. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And that's the type of nationalism and pride we need to have.
Right.
If every nation would practice that, imagine El Salvador, Nicaragua, Guatemala having national pride that we want to make this nation the best nation there is.
Yeah, and I want to clarify what I'm saying here. Okay. Nationalism isn't bad, but nationalism can easily be exploited. Obama actually said something one of his first trips to Europe, and they said, do you believe in American exceptionalism? He said, of course, the same way you Germans should believe in German exceptionalism. Being the best you can be. You know, if my nationalism requires putting somebody else down, then I'm screwed up. because you don't elevate yourself by putting someone else down. Quite the opposite.
That is exactly right. You'll never lift people up by bringing others down to their level.
Yes.
You end up with just two classes that are messed up.
And that's what Marxism gets completely wrong.
Right.
Completely wrong.
Right. And critical theory, critical race, because it never ends. That's the problem. Because that number one word, critical.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
The whole core of it is to be critical of whatever power structure there is. Mm. And you're always supposed to evaluate it based on history and social influences, including Freudism. There's a sexual context to this as well, because Sigmund Freud was involved with a lot of this. And these people were taking Marx and Sigmund Freud and trying to synthesize their thoughts. It's usually what happens to the uber smart, not the uber rich, but the uber, by the way, is a German word for over, or the higher rich, the higher intelligent. And we always get in trouble with that. What does it say in Romans 2nd chapter? Professing themselves wise, they became fools.
Exactly.
And they traded the incorruptible carnal for the incorruptible. In other words, they traded God and the things of God for the things, the human, fleshly, mortal things.
Yeah. And
that's where the problem lies with critical theory.
And the church has its own, you know, application of that. You usually hear it the back foyer of the church afterwards, preceded by the words, bless his heart. And then they rip somebody down, you know.
Speak for your own church. that never happens at our church.
Well, oh, no. Your church, they say, pray for him.
Pray for him. Yeah. we'll keep brother so-and-so and sister so-and-so in prayer.
Yes.
That's good.
He needs Jesus.
Or more of Jesus.
Our producer's losing it here.
He's being baptized into some new thought here, some our own critical thought here. We better quit before we get really carried away.
Yeah.
So we thank you. We're going to wrap it up for another week. And we thank you all so much for tuning in. Please tune in again next week to Fresh Black Coffee. Remember, the email is freshblackcoffee@gmail.com. freshblackcoffee@gmail.com. Thanks, David.
You bet.
It's been real fun, and hopefully we can do this again next week.
I'd love to.
Hey, God bless everybody. Have a great week.